On a cold December morning, CCTV captures fleeting images of a man in London. Within 24 hours, he is dead. His body discovered 200 miles away on a Pennine moor.
Most people have some form of ID, but this man didn't. He didn't have anything.
His every move in his final hours draws a blank.
Almost maintaining sort of ghost-like appearance. He didn't leave anything that left a trace whatsoever.
It's a death that mystifies detectives.
Something was wrong. This is not turning out as easy as we thought.
And throws up theories that can't be ruled out.
Well, he's adamant that he wouldn't have killed himself.
I think all the way through, we have to consider every single possibility. I thought he was a spy.
Personal opinion, I don't think his intention was to die in Oldham that day.
Mystery of the Man on the Moor. An empty road cutting through rugged moorland. Dovestone, Oldham. A man driving a mountain rescue vehicle.
Hello,
police emergency.
I've just
found a dead body. And he's just laid out on the side of a path. It's a mountain track. It's like a Land Rover type track.
Any idea how old he is?
Any idea how old he is?
50 to
60. 50 to 60. I'm sorry to have to ask you this, but is he definitely deceased? Is he cold?
Yeah, definitely gone.
Okay.
700 feet above sea level, on an exposed edge of the Pennines, lies Dovestone.
It's a cold winter morning, quite fast wind, driving rain. We were called out to reports of a male that had been found unconscious, possible cardiac arrest.
The man is lying dead on the top of Saddleworth Moor. Bizarrely, he's dressed for the high street rather than the hills.
The male himself was lay here with his head facing up towards the top of the track. Lay in quite a straight position, quite peaceful really. Out with his arms by his side, facing up towards the sky.
CID, Oldham Police Station.
A natural death, suicide, or a mysterious murder?
Johnny, I've just spoke to Bluecoat School. They don't hold.
Leading the investigation, Detective Sergeant John Coleman.
He certainly didn't do anything to assist us in identifying him. It's very unusual for a person of whatever age nowadays to be not in possession of any forms of identification.
Most people these days have a mobile phone, a wallet, a purse, some form of ID, a bank card. This man didn't. He didn't have anything. He didn't have anything whatsoever except for these train tickets, some cash, and a medicine bottle. John, can you just pass me the pictures of the bottle, please, if that's okay?
An empty bottle of thyroid medicine gives detectives an intriguing clue.
Hello, I was wondering if you could help me. I'm calling from Greater Manchester Police. So we've got a male that was found in the Oldham area, deceased. At this stage, we've been unable to identify him because when he was found, there was nothing on his person which we could identify him from. However, on him, he had a little box of thyroxine sodium tablets. It was made by yourselves, Pakistan Limited. If we can give you these code, can you tell us where it was manufactured and where it was sent to? I don't suppose you could run them through, could you? Or would they just not appear in your system?
Without an identity, the man is given the name Neil Dovestone. They have no witnesses to the death, but at the bottom of the hill in the nearby village of Greenfield is someone who saw Neil very much alive.
Just came up to the bar and asked for directions to the top of the mountain. Well, it was grey earth, thinning a bit, fairly thin. Struck me as being 70 plus. no accident that I could place. He didn't appear stressed, he didn't appear unhappy. He just appeared like a normal person. The only unusual thing was the way he was dressed. He was dressed in casual clothes with a light rain mac on and normal trousers and slip-on shoes. And most people that come here that are going walking up there are dressed in with anorak, rucksack, walking boots.
Neil Dovestone sets off up the track, with the storm brewing and the night closing in. His body would be found 3 miles away the next day.
From an ominous cloudy sky to a train station.
Attention turns to the train ticket found in Neil's pocket. He could have travelled through Manchester Piccadilly. Police trawl the station's CCTV for evidence of Neil's last hours.
It always makes me laugh because people who don't know about how CCTV systems work, you sort of see, you see the films, don't you? See like the Bourne Identity. And straight away they get the right person, they track him through, it's really easy. The reality is that it's very time consuming work.
DC Ben Miller is scanning CCTV footage.
With hundreds of cameras watching thousands of people, Detective Constable Ben Miller scans the screens for just one face.
What we wanted to do was to track him through the station to see if he uses any credit cards, anything that can identify him. Survey him, he'll pay for something with some form of traceable currency.
Footage of the mystery man wandering through the station.
It takes detectives 3 days to piece together his movements.
The man goes up an escalator, then later comes down the stairs next to it, hands in his coat pocket.
He didn't take a standard path, so people will generally get off the train. They will go perhaps to a food establishment, perhaps to an ATM machine, and then they will leave, or they will get another train. This gentleman didn't do that. He wandered around as if he was exploring or lost or didn't quite know where to go or what to do.
Footage of the man taking a seat next to other people.
He sat down quite calmly. He just took his time over his meal, really. There didn't seem to be any great issue or hurry with him whatsoever. Just looked like a perfectly normal member of the public, just having nowhere to go in a rush, just eating his sandwich, drinking his drink.
Having finished his food, he blows his nose, then zips up his coat.
He would almost maintain his sort of ghost-like appearance throughout the station, and although he did go to lots of places, he didn't leave anything that left a trace whatsoever.
After nearly an hour, Neil heads off in the direction of the city centre, disappearing from CCTV. These are the last images of Neil Dovestone alive.
Neil walking down a street.
High in the Pennines sits Saddleworth Moor. A dramatic landscape. And at times, a desolate and dangerous place. It's been 4 months since the man they call Neil Dovestone was found dead on the moor. And in that time, detectives are no closer to knowing why he was there.
And if you want to give me a call back, it's 0161.
Or who he was.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Hi, it's John Coleman from Great Manchester Police. Can you put me through to Julie Evans, please?
An empty medicine bottle found in Neil's pocket has been sent to forensics for analysis.
The results were phoned through to me. I nearly fell off my chair, so I couldn't believe it.
DS Coleman jots down some notes while listening.
Strychnine in the bottle. Okay,
So let's see how many questions I can tick off here that I don't need to ask you then. Cause of death, which was strychnine poisoning. Well, I've never heard of it in the UK in my time in policing. It's known as the Agatha Christie drug. In the 1930s, she often used poisons in her storylines. Arcing spasms, painful death. Not a drug you would normally choose at any time in your life. The thing that concerns me slightly, the label on the bottle, thyroxine sodium. And now we know that it contains strychnine. No, I suppose we need to negate that somebody else hasn't put that drug into that container and in believing it was thyroxine sodium. All right, great to speak to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Bye.
The bottle?
I heard. Would that mean that he's put it into that container or he's bought it in that container? The plot thickens.
Oops.
Oops. What do you mean?
All the evidence suggests that he's taken it himself, but still, we're going to have to evidence that.
But he's known what's in that container?
Yes. Make sure there's no third party. So to identify the sequence of events leading to his death, we need to find an next of kin to see if he was in a sound mind.
Detectives have a cause of death, but still no idea if Neil has taken his own life or someone has murdered him. They need to find out his real name.
Outstanding actions, Kelly. Speak to Lancashire coroners.
A second post-mortem unearths another clue. A metal plate discovered in Neil's leg was manufactured in Pakistan. The bottle containing the poison was from there too. Could this fur-skinned man have travelled thousands of miles to die on a remote Pennine Moor?
There was lots of theories brought to the attention of the investigation team. He was in some way related to the tragedies that happened on the moors. There was another theory that he was Basil from the Hatton Garden job in London, which is a famous jewellery robbery. Numerous people from around the country reporting that the image that we had captured and put out, that he could be one of their relatives who'd been missing for quite some time.
Banbury, Oxfordshire.
At any one time in the UK, there are hundreds of people that are missing and looked for by loved ones.
Every lead is investigated, hundreds so far, but they've all drawn a blank.
Steve?
Yeah.
John Coleman.
John, good to see you. How are you?
Then 5 months in, a fresh call. Steve Moore has seen the publicity surrounding the case. He thinks he knows exactly who Neil Dovestone is. His father.
D.S. Coleman and D.C. Chapman are at Steve's house.
His dad, Patrick, went missing 20 years ago whilst living in Spain. D.S. John Coleman hopes Steve's DNA will match the dead man from the mole.
They've taken a swab.
So, when you saw this article, I believe it was in The Guardian,
yep,
and the press releases that we've put out, you believe he looks like, he resembles Neil?
I'd seen the case, it was kind of in my periphery, but when that eFit was released, and it was in the paper, and it was just the spit of my dad, and I was thinking, oh, and I was thinking, God, that really does look like him. I can't prove anything bad's happened, I don't necessarily think anything bad's happened, but where is he? He's not the sort of bloke to just disappear like that. He doesn't have this massive network of friends that you can just go and stay with. Because I'm the child of a missing person, and you get in touch with all the missing person's networks, you realise how many people are out there who are suffering with this. This stuff can control your life if you're not very careful. You know, for a few years there, it was all-consuming. You've got to move on. As you say, I've got my own kids now, I've got a job, I've got other things to worry about.
The difficult thing about my role in this is that I'm not going to have a positive result. If I identify him, it's bad news. And if we don't identify him, unfortunately, he's still he's still a question to be answered.
Yeah.
But we'll have a result for you within definitely within 10 days.
A wasp on a leaf outside a mortuary.
For 6 months, Neil's been lying unclaimed in Oldham Mortuary. In all that time, there's been no breakthrough. Steve Moore's DNA comes back negative. Inquiries in Pakistan have so far produced nothing.
July 2016. BBC
Five Live. Five Live Daily with Adrian Childs.
It's 8 minutes past ten. Last December,
John is pinning his hopes on one last publicity push.
Pub near Saddleworth Moor.
D.S. Coleman enters a BBC building.
It was personal. Extremely personal, not just for myself, but for my team. We wanted to identify him and also to identify and meet the family members.
It really is a fact being stranger than fiction type story, this. We've got Detective Sergeant John Coleman. Have you ever come across the like of this?
Never, Adrian. This is an investigation in a lifetime.
I mean, what clothes was he... What condition was he in? What did he appear to...
There's not much more time that we can spend on the inquiries that we've got outstanding. You can only go so far.
He also had a plastic bottle in his possession.
We've done all this publicity, we've kind of done things in the media, we've done things on social media, and how has no one kind of recognised him? How has no one kind of looked at that footage and thought, oh, that's such a body? So that kind of confused us a lot, because we thought, well, there must be someone out there that's missing him.
Don't take this the wrong way, but nobody's banging on your door from his family saying, what happened here?
Press was massive. I think press was our biggest kind of drive to try and identify this male, because we thought it would touch the hearts of people, because it touched ours.
The months pass. With no fingerprint match at home or abroad, no DNA hit from around the world, and every inquiry detectives make coming to nothing, the investigation is running out of options.
Greater Manchester Police Headquarters.
11 months on, and Pakistan, where the plate in Neil's leg came from, is now the best hope. John's asked the UK's National Crime Agency Bureau in Islamabad to trace the surgeon who operated on Neil.
You copy?
Stuart, John, how did we go on Saturday?
Right, it was very pleasant. It was very, very nice guy. Now, what he was saying, John, in a nutshell, the X-ray is not that unusual. It's not that unique. There are about 500 of these operations every year in Karachi alone. There's a lot more of them than certainly I'd anticipated.
Right.
I don't think you're ever going to trace who it is from what we've got.
Is this not the time of the call when you're supposed to say, oh, I have got some good news for you, though?
No, I'm afraid not.
Right, well, you've been great. Thanks very much for all your help.
No worries.
All the best. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Don't know, mate. Bye.
Deflated, he shakes his head.
There you go. We'll have to think of something else. Or maybe not.
I remember him coming back from that call and he said, oh, you know, it's not going to take us anywhere. We haven't got the result that we want from Pakistan. And for the first time in the whole investigation, so it was like 11 months, I think, at that point, maybe even more, I thought to myself, I didn't want to tell John, but I thought to myself, we're not going to find him. We're not going to identify this man. And then, like 3 days later, we come back into work. All of a sudden, it explodes.
Good afternoon, Sue Weatherby.
Sue, it's John Coleman. I'm just checking that you're going to be in, because I'm going to send somebody round to have a chat with you about something.
Yes, I'm in.
Cheers, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
After nearly a year of getting nowhere, John is on the edge of a possible breakthrough.
The situation is today, I've had a telephone call from
one of my colleagues going through passenger lists.
Have you spoke to Julie?
Yeah, from Pakistan flights to the UK. He's come back today with this gentleman's details, David Litton. At this stage, it is just another inquiry, but there's potential that this could be Neil.
Right, OK.
D.S. Coleman writes on a whiteboard.
This was a big moment for the investigation. This was a distinct, definitive line of inquiry, and once we had that off point, I knew that this was then back into our normal work.
What do we need?
I need you to check whether he's claiming benefits. Does he have a bank account?
We just have to get that little bit of a nudge, and then we put all the pieces together very quickly.
Our records show that there's no movement and he's not known to us on the system, so...
I'll go do that.
A printout of David Litton's flight reservation details.
6 days later, a year to the day since Neil's body was found, the investigation receives another vital piece of evidence.
Hi, Kelly, it's John.
Hi.
Is Nick in yet?
Yeah.
Do you want to both just nick down and we'll have a quick chat?
He's very cryptic. He loves to keep suspense, like build the suspense. And he called us and said, would you and Kelly come down to the office? I've got something to show you. On our way down, Kelly and I were kind of like, it's either going to be amazing news and this is going to be confirmed and we're going to be there and we're on the home run, or it's going to be another setback.
We didn't know whether it was going to be another disappointment or whether he had something additional that would kind of take us further.
So it was a little bit of suspense whilst we were walking down, wondering what we were going to be faced with when we walked into the office.
Clutching folders, DC Nicola Chapman and DC Kelly Bragg step into Coleman's office.
I want to show you a picture which has come through from Pakistan.
He shows them photos on his mobile.
Wow.
That's come from Lahore in Pakistan.
Wow.
Airport image as he was travelling.
You kind of can't quite believe it. After all that time, you're kind of like, have we done it? Half your brain's going, oh, my God, yeah, and then the other part is going, no, something's going to happen to kind of ruin it, because it has every other time.
How strange that we have found this out today.
On his anniversary.
I literally can't get over it.
Yeah.
You can't write it, really. See, that image is really what he looked like the day that we found him.
This
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Minus the glasses.
Just aged. He just looks older.
Everything.
On
his hairline, his jaw's the same shape.
His mouth. His ears.
So then we have the inquiries all around. Let's find next of kin. Thinking that's going to be quite easy. We'll just do electoral rolls. We'll do genealogy work. We start that and then find out very quickly that something was wrong. This is not turning out as easy as we thought, but I shouldn't have been surprised the way this investigation has gone.
A year since Neil Dovestone began his final journey from a busy London street to the moors above Oldham, DS John Coleman has found his man. His name is David Litton.
CID, Oldham Police Station.
Aged 67, he flew into the UK from Pakistan 2 days before he died.
So we have updates from Pakistan, updates from the solicitors who represented him at the sale of his house on Lillian Road, number 46. We've got updates on his employment, and there's pretty significant updates.
Morning. Bringing a chair around, Nick.
Yeah.
Let's just go through. Right, I've had a couple of days off. My phone's been red hot, so... Hiya, boss. You all right?
Hiya, boss.
Good timing.
John has tracked down a British-Pakistani friend of David's who had no idea he was missing.
He did describe him as being a male of Jewish descent. With regards to his leisure, he liked to meditate. He wasn't a person who did any sports. Employment, he was a train driver on the London Underground. And apparently he liked the solitude of just being stuck in his cab. But interestingly, when asked when the last time you've seen or heard from him, he said, well, I heard from him about 12 months ago. And I says, well, 12 months ago? What date? Well, I picked him up from Heathrow Airport.
What? Really?
And drove him to a hotel in Ealing. He had his suitcase when he went in, a suitcase with wheels.
David Litton's last UK address is a wealth of information about how he paid for his new life in Pakistan.
I've spoken to the solicitors. He's confirmed that the property at 46 Lillian Road was sold for £220,000. Right. 215 of those of that sum is profit. So when he left the country for Pakistan, he was in possession of at least £215,000. So if we can just push this next little bit, next of kin, let's tell the story about what's happened for the coroner, what's happened in Pakistan, why was he there, right? Not a bad update, was it?
It was a very good update, John.
A few things to crack on with.
Images of David leaving Pakistan for Heathrow just 2 days before he died are now key to an inquiry that is generating headlines around the world. Detectives still don't know why he was on the moor and if he was alone. The search is on for David Litton's family.
I always describe that moment, that very day, as like a little ball at the top of a little slope, and we sort of let it go that day. And then from there, the investigation just sort of went. It just went crazy.
The kind of days following that were just manic. I started looking at the genealogy sites, kind of putting that name and that date of birth in. But first of all, I was coming up blank.
Streatham Common.
The David Litton they are looking for left no family trace, and the friend couldn't help. Detective Constables Kelly and Nicola are sent to London. Could a house David sold more than a decade earlier open the door to him and his family? Trawling dozens of documents, the two detectives begin piecing together elements of the life led by the man they'd known as Neil Dovestone.
This is interesting, first page. We've not seen that one before, have we, that passport?
God, it looks really young there.
I know.
Buried in the paperwork, a secret to David's life and the reason he and his family are proving so difficult to track down.
Gosh. Right, I'll read it to you. I, David Litton, formerly David Keith Lautenberg, I absolutely and entirely renounce, relinquish and abandon the use of my former name of David Keith Lautenberg and assume, adopt and determine to take and use from the date hereof the name of David Litton.
David's family name, Lautenberg, is rare. Detectives find only a handful in the country.
So that's set off a whole new kind of line of inquiry and a whole host of kind of new actions. Because I was able to find him then quite easily and find a record of his birth. I was able to find the maiden name of his mum. In the meantime, I had kind of looked for Lautenberg and that maiden name to see if there was anyone else coming up, and I'd found a person called Jeremy F. Lautenberg, who had the same maiden name for the mum.
D.S. Coleman puts a coin in a vending machine and presses some buttons.
Breakfast. Predominantly, we need to find his next of kin. Mother might still be alive and potentially may have a brother. So I need urgently, as quickly as possible, to find the next of kin details so that we can, A, pass a death message and then we can move forward with a burial as soon as we possibly can. I am hopeful that that is just a matter of days away now, which at one stage I didn't think we'd ever get to.
Got a call, asked me my name.
Do you have a brother?
Yep.
Yes, I do. Can you confirm your brother's name? I said yes. Do you know his date of birth? Of course. He's around. And I thought, no, it can't be. There was a silence for what seemed like a few beats, and I could hear a man steeling himself to give me bad news.
From a bald man sitting in an armchair to a black and white photo of two young boys.
The more questions you ask, the less you know. That's basically David. He was a brilliant but troubled guy. We were polar opposites. I had, rightly or wrongly, assumed that David was living probably in California. I had had some letters from David. David used to write to me every so often, 2-3 times a year. And I got them, for some reason, they're always postmarked California. Why, I've got no idea. He's been living in Pakistan. Didn't tell anybody. He told nobody where he went. Nobody.
After months of frustration, the investigation is now moving quickly. John has traced David's brother and the friend who'd collected him from Heathrow. But then he gets another surprising lead. He has heard from a woman who knew David intimately for decades and last saw him before he left for Pakistan.
She said she described the house as it was sparse, it was unfurnished, there was no kettle, cooker, fridge, no toaster, nothing to make the house more comfortable or his life more comfortable. He was earning good money at the time as a croupier. And she said the reason why we never got married, because he would do things which wound her up. An example, at 7 o'clock one night, he rang up and says, I want to buy some new socks and pants, but I want to buy the best ones. Where do I go? And she's like, well, just go wherever. And she was with him between 71 and 2006.
A former girlfriend, she has fond memories of David Litton, despite the fact he never told her he was leaving for Pakistan.
CCTV footage of David.
He was interesting. He didn't mix terribly well. He was a lovely, lovely gentleman. Couldn't fault him at all. He didn't want the luxuries of life. He wasn't comfortable with the luxuries. What he'd bought, he bought well. If you've got no money, you don't buy ballet shoes. Good quality cord trousers. Again, they're not cheap, but he would buy expensive stuff to last. No credit cards, no debit cards, no nothing. But he was saving for what he wanted. He liked the good things in life.
Maureen Toogood, former girlfriend.
Weeks ago, John was told Pakistan was a dead end. Now, he's meeting the same agent from Islamabad who's been finding out more about the mysterious David Litton.
So this is the updated information
from today?
Today,
yeah.
Pakistan.
He's tracked David Litton's last movements.
Upper House Hotel, Stoke-on-Trent.
We now know that he was in a travel agent's in Lahore, in Pakistan, in the days before he was found at Dovestones. He's remembered from the staff that were in that travel agent's as coming into their shop in what they describe as a panic. His visa had been extended, it would appear at late notice, and he wanted to travel urgently. He bought a single fare ticket, even though they were advising him that that was technically more expensive than a return ticket. He initially came into that travel agent's and couldn't speak a word of Urdu.
See, that's real unusual. If he's been in Pakistan for 10 years,
yeah,
surely he doesn't have any Pakistan
That's why they're saying that he had no Pakistan language at all. And they had a big communication problem because of this. And he left. But he came back 2 hours later with two Pakistan men. But his desire was an urgency to get a ticket to the UK.
We had what we thought was a mystery because he's travelled from Ealing to Dovestones in Greenfield.
Yeah.
But now we know he's not travelled, he's travelled from Pakistan.
Yes.
To Ealing, Ealing to Dovestones.
Yeah.
Why in God's name would you go to Dovestones?
John still has far more questions than answers about David's life. The man who died on Saddleworth Moor now has a name. David Litton. He flew into the UK from Pakistan just 2 days before his body was found. Whilst detectives have an identity, they are still trying to unravel the mystery of his life halfway around the world.
It's John Coleman from the police.
John Coleman is speaking to David's friend of more than 40 years for further information.
You are sitting in the dark, but let me try and illuminate you.
He was one of the last people to see David alive.
So you were in Pakistan with him? And did he say the reason why he was travelling?
I was amazed to learn that not only are they good friends, but they travelled out together to Pakistan originally in 2006. And since that time, David remained in Pakistan and the friend came back to the UK.
Well, he's adamant that he wouldn't have killed himself.
Pressure is on to learn more about David Litton and why he travelled thousands of miles to his death on a remote moor. The investigation is likely to end with the imminent coroner's inquest.
Every time you have a phone call, something else comes out of it. So now we know he's been to Pakistan so many times. But is that in his passport, or was that being his old passport?
We still don't know 100% why he went to live in Pakistan. We know that he came back with 18 kilograms of luggage, but we don't know where that is. We know he obviously had a passport to get back in the country, but we don't know where that is. We don't know why he booked a hotel for 5 days, yet only stayed one. And we still don't know why he came to Oldham.
Finchley, North London.
When the police told me he'd been living in Lahore, I mean, Lahore's a beautiful city, you know, but when they told me he'd been living there, I thought, huh? Why? It's so hot there. Because David hated the heat. Never wore a short-sleeve shirt, ever. He always wore a white long-sleeve shirt when he went out in summer. Even when we were kids, it was too hot for him to play. You know, we'd all go to the swimming pool every day. He'd never come. It was too hot for him. David was interested in religion. Well, we were Jewish. David was bar mitzvahed, the same as me. You know, Mum and Dad were very religious. And you know, my father had his own seat in synagogue. Pakistan, not the easiest place in the world to be a, no offence, but a white Jewish person. Not that he wore his, his religion centre front. The fact that it didn't make any sense makes perfect sense if you knew David.
Brother Jeremy Lawton.
It's just days till the inquest. Stuart Copley from the National Crime Agency has news from Pakistan. He's back to brief John.
I've got quite a few things in here to let you know. Bit of an update.
As long as that update involves why Dovestone.
He's been asking questions in Lahore and has got as close as he can to David Litton's life.
These are the entrance exit gates to the property that David Litton lived at. They lead you through to a staircase onto the first floor, which is the access that he had.
That was going up the stairs to the landing, and walking through this door is his bedroom.
Where David Litton spends his time in this property. Immediately off the bedroom is a bathroom,
The bathroom has a squat toilet.
Are we saying that that is how the property has been left by David?
Yes, as we understand it.
Is that generally how people live in Pakistan?
A lot of people live
like
this,
yeah, so it's
yes.
not out of the norm?
No.
And returning back through the bedroom.
The place is basic and sparsely furnished.
Into the kitchen area.
Initial information suggested David was renting this house, but inquiries in Pakistan are revealing by local standards David Litton was a wealthy man.
So, million-dollar question, who owns the property?
The seller was told on several occasions that the property belongs to David Litton and David Litton was paying the money for it. However, it was put in the name of another individual because David Litton had no rights to own property in Pakistan.
David later transferred more than £100,000 to the registered owner of the house. Stuart's been told nearly every penny has now been spent.
Say that.
David was dead at the time.
He's purchased land in July 2016.
Yes.
David wasn't identified.
Well, he's still missing.
So the money has been spent 7 or 8 months after David has died.
He says it's been spent.
And
yes.
6 months before we know.
Yes. Yeah.
Neil Dovestone.
That's right.
Is David.
Was there a suggestion that he was purchasing it on behalf of David?
No, he didn't say that. He just said, I've purchased land with the money.
And more confusing evidence is coming out of Lahore. There's a girlfriend that can't be traced. There's a mystery about how he really broke his leg. And nobody can work out what's happened to all of David's money.
We've been given one version of events, and then the information you're giving us today has just thrown everything into the air. We were told he lived in a rented property. Now we know he owned it. We were told his operation was a result of slipping on a banana skin. Now we've told that he had a quarrel. Everything's up in the air again, I think.
On the moor, a man opens a gate and a car passes through.
I think all the way through, we have to consider every single possibility and we can't let ourselves just go down the most obvious route because we don't want to miss anything. I thought he was a spy, but and John were like ignoring me a little bit. But I was like, it could be. Would you kind of choose to do that yourself? And obviously I was thinking of cases that have been in the media, like in the past, where people have been poisoned.
This is a super sensitive subject, you know. It's somebody's life, it's somebody's family member, it's someone's brother. So it sometimes feels wrong to have a theory. But I think ultimately, in our line of work, you do come up with your own theory in your mind as to what happened here. I think it'd be hard for me to give you one, because there could be many. But, personal opinion? I don't think his intention was to die in Oldham that day.
Why travel to Dovestones? Why would he travel 200 miles? Why, when advised not to, would you travel up the mountain at that time of night when it's going to be dark when you make it there?
At the wheel of a police 4x4, D.S. Coleman drives to a hilltop and stops to gaze out over the moor.
I just need to know why.
Maureen Toogood, former girlfriend.
We never left under a cloud. So why couldn't he phone me instead of going up north where you don't know anybody? If you wanted to do something, you'd do it, but why up north? Why up on the moors? He didn't know anybody.
Prestwich Cemetery, Manchester. Stars of David adorn the gated entrance to the grounds.
15 months after David Litton's body was discovered, and an investigation that spanned two continents, the mystery of his death is going with him to his grave.
Mourners transport David's coffin from a hearse to a chapel. Overwhelmed, Jeremy takes in a deep breath.
You always think you could make more effort. Always. Until the point when you can't. I did try. I tried often. David didn't do friends. And he certainly didn't do brothers. I always thought that if he went, I would be okay with the effort that I'd made. But of course, then it happens and you think, coulda, shoulda, woulda.
A grey sky hangs over the cemetery, where a few leafless trees stand among the gravestones. About a dozen mourners are in attendance at David's funeral. They lower his coffin into the ground. The coroner recorded an open verdict into the death of David Lytton.